WBUR Podcasts, Boston.
I'm Darryl C. Murphy, and you're listening to The Common. WBUR reporter Martha Biebinger, welcome back to The Common.
Thank you so much for having me, Darryl.
Martha, I want to begin this episode a little differently than we normally do. You recently reported a story about addiction care that starts with a teenager named Sam in a pediatrician's office in Uxbridge, Massachusetts. Take us into that office and tell us why you started there.
So when you walk into the waiting room, you see a reading nook with picture books and puzzles on the wall. And then heading into the actual exam room, one wall is plastered with planets and stars. And there's a cartoon character painted on the ceiling that kids can look at when they have to lay down on the exam table. And I want to just contrast that for you, Darryl, with the times that I've been to addiction treatment facilities. Mm-hmm. And there's often an armed guard outside the front door. They are not always the most attractive looking places because they deal with some pretty serious issues when it comes to adults. But that's not an environment that's going to work for a 15, 16, 17 year old.
Mm-hmm.
They are used to getting care for the most part in the same office where they've gotten their flu shots and vaccines for years. So if you want addiction care to become more normalized and accepted, deliver it where teens are used to getting it.
Okay, now your story focuses on kids like Sam and how more of them are dying of drug overdoses. Tell me more about Sam and how he is looking to avoid this fate for himself.
Sam is a 17-year-old. He likes to snowboard. He had a circle of friends, Darryl, who made it pretty easy for him to start buying marijuana and then pain pills, although he also bought them on social media sites like Snapchat. He says he got addicted to opioids after just about a week of trying the pills. So Sam went to residential treatment for a month or two and then did some what are called step-down programs. You go to outpatient care for a number of months. He was never offered buprenorphine, this medication that helps curb cravings at the residential program or the step-down programs. And when the cravings came back really strong, a counselor recommended that his mom try Dr. Safdar Medina, who's one of the few pediatricians in Massachusetts who prescribes buprenorphine in a community setting. So in this period, Sam had to change schools. He had to change friend groups. He's really had to remake his life at a time when people are just really trying to get their feet on the ground and feel okay about who they are.
Yeah.
And that is what he says was the hardest part about this whole process.
Just surrounding yourself with the right people is definitely a big thing you want to focus on. That'd be my biggest piece of advice.
How serious of an addiction crisis are we dealing with here?
Darryl, deaths among adolescents, 10 to 19-year-olds, are one of the fastest rising age groups right now. And deaths among that age group set a new record again in 2022. We're losing the equivalent of about a classroom's worth of teenagers every week. Now, at the same time that we're seeing those numbers go up, we're seeing prescriptions for one of the most common medications used to treat addiction. It's called buprenorphine. We're seeing prescriptions for teens drop. We're also seeing teens sent to treatment facilities where the course of treatment is very different. They're often offered horseback riding or walks in the woods, non-medical interventions. Now, I'm not opposed to horseback riding or walks in the woods. I think those could also be great components of a recovery. But the research shows, including studies done by Dr. Scott Hadlin at Massachusetts General Hospital for Children, it shows that with fentanyl, we need medications like buprenorphine to curb the cravings and prevent people from relapsing and save lives.
You mentioned fentanyl. talk to me about what's driving this increase in drug-associated deaths among adolescents.
It's quite a mixed story. About a quarter of the teen deaths are linked to pills that teenagers, adolescents are buying via Snapchat or TikTok or Reddit, Instagram, and they're fake. They look like Adderall or Xanax or Percocets, but they actually have fentanyl in them. And we're seeing a lot of accidental deaths related to these pills. And then another quarter or so are people who have a clear addiction. They've had a prior overdose. They've become addicted to opioids through a number of different mechanisms. In the case of Sam in my story, he started smoking marijuana and then wanted something kind of more powerful, so switched to the pain pills. And then other people may be doing other types of recreational drug use. We don't have data that can explain the whole population of people, but that's a snapshot of what's going on.
How hard is it for adolescents to access treatment?
Only about 6% of pediatricians in a recent survey said that they were prescribing buprenorphine. And a lot of the ones that do are in academic medical centers, the big hospitals that might have addiction treatment programs for teens. So if you don't live near one of the few pediatricians who's offering this or a big teaching hospital like we have in Boston, then it's pretty hard for a teen to get access to that. Very few of the residential programs, I think it's 1 in 4, offer teens buprenorphine.
Martha, we're going to take a break here, but when we get back, I want to talk about the other part of your story, which focuses on how pediatricians can help. So we'll be right back.
A gruesome scandal at the nation's most prestigious university shines a light on a macabre and lucrative world of buying and selling human remains.
Human body parts taken by a manager at the Harvard Medical School morgue and then sold to customers online.
So my first skull is right there on the top shelf. That's my first and my favorite.
I'm reporter Allie Jarmani, and this story raises some tough questions. How should we treat the dead? And who gets to decide?
There should be some middle ground where we treat deceased tissues differently than we treat old refrigerators.
This is Postmortem, The Stolen Bodies of Harvard, a new season of WBUR's Last Scene. Listen and follow Last Scene wherever you get your podcasts.
So, Martha, we're talking about your story, which covers the increase of kids dying from a drug overdose and the role pediatricians can play in preventing that. So tell us more about that second half. Tell us more about how pediatricians can play a role in prevention of these deaths.
Let me start by recognizing, Daryl, that there's some well-founded hesitation on the part of pediatricians because many were not in their pediatric residency programs, they weren't trained to think of addiction as one of the diseases they needed to learn to treat. For so many years, addiction was another animal. You know, it was out there outside of the whole medical sphere. And so pediatricians don't feel equipped to talk to patients about it or to understand the various treatment options. Dr. Scott Hadlin runs addiction medicine for youth at Mass General Hospital. And he's one of the people who conducted the survey that found the reasons why pediatricians aren't prescribing buprenorphine or aren't screening for addiction. You know, that they don't feel trained. They don't think they have the staff. They don't think it's their job. And here's what he says.
In this era where young people are dying at truly unprecedented rates of opioid overdose, it's really critical that we save lives. And we know that buprenorphine is a medication that saves lives.
It is the recommendation right now of the American Academy of Pediatrics that pediatricians offer buprenorphine to patients who are addicted to opioids. So there's no requirement, but there is a push underway.
Yeah, talk to me about that push. Tell me more.
I think some of it is happening with a nudge at conferences when doctors like Dr. Hadlin, who we just heard from, give talks about how to do this. Some of it is happening when doctors see the impact of the opioid crisis in their communities. So I just filed another story about a study that's out this week, Daryl, that shows in Massachusetts, every other adult knows somebody who died of an overdose. Mm. It's really widespread. And they only surveyed adults, so we don't even know what that picture looks like for kids. But pediatricians know that this is an issue that needs more attention. And it may be that it's just a generational change. But then we also have the testimony of people like Dr. Safdar Medina in Uxbridge, Massachusetts, who says this is one of the most rewarding things that he does. And here's what Dr. Medina told me.
If we can take care of it, we have now produced a functional adult. We have produced an adult that will no longer have a lifetime of these challenges to worry about.
And the pediatricians who are treating addiction, Daryl, I hear that same sentiment from often. They say, like, you can see a life transformed in your office. They are hoping that the light bulb moment kind of happens and people get inspired.
Looking into the future, do you see the push to make addiction treatment among adolescents more of an accepted practice among pediatricians?
I think addiction treatment is moving into the mainstream medicine everywhere. It's really a question of how fast it will happen.
I want to bring it back to Sam, Martha.
Yes, please.
How's he doing?
As far as I know, Daryl, his urine tests continue to show that he doesn't have traces of any of the fake pills that he was addicted to before he started seeing Dr. Medina and doing some other treatment. He's in a program where he's going to graduate high school more or less on time. He might be a semester behind some of his other friends, but the addiction and treatment didn't completely derail that path for him. He's getting to snowboard a lot. He's making new friends. At the last visit, he was talking to the doctor about his girlfriend, and that relationship seemed to be going well. So at 17, he's been through more than a lot of us have, and he's putting his life back together, and there will be bumps, but he's doing it.
Martha, thank you for this story and bringing it to us and taking the time to talk with us about it. It's really important, and I hope that it helps somebody listening. So thank you so much.
Thanks for having me, Daryl.
That's WBUR reporter Martha Biebinger. And if you or someone you care about is struggling with addiction and may be at risk of an overdose, you can call the Massachusetts Overdose Prevention Helpline at 800-972-0590. And that's our show for today. Thank you so much for listening to The Common. If you want to get in touch with us, hit us up on Instagram at WBURTheCommon or send us an email at thecommon@wbur.org. And now it is that time for me to let you know that The Common is produced by Caitlin Harrop and Franny Monahan with help from CCU. It's mixed by Emily Jankowski, Matt Reed, and Paul Vitkus. And it's edited by Samantha Joshi and Ben Brock Johnson. And our theme music is Me from Hisu. And from the newsroom of WBUR, I'm your host, Daryl C. Murphy. I'll talk to you soon.